This is the Arkansas Times Week in Review podcast for Friday, April 26, 2024. Thanks for joining us. We're taking this week off, but rather than leave you empty-handed, we decided to share something special this week. Beginning in November of 2023, the Arkansas Times started a series of luncheon talks that cover current political and social events in the state of Arkansas. The events also function as a fundraiser for an investigative reporting fund. The talks feature different speakers like Baker Curris, Lauren Cowles, who is a drafter of the Arkansas Abortion Amendment and a coalition member with Arkansas for Limited Government, former State Representative Nate Bell, and this week we heard from former Arkansas Times Editor-in-Chief Max Brantley, which we're sharing with you today. So without further ado, here's Alan Leverett introducing Max Brantley.
I want to extend a greeting to all of our fellow travelers that are here today, and we appreciate you being here. This is, I guess, the fifth in a series of current events lectures that we've been doing to bring people up to date on important political and social issues here in Arkansas. It's also a fundraiser for the Arkansas Times. 100% of the money that y'all paid today is going to our investigative reporting fund for the Arkansas Times. We have grown our editorial staff from 6 people to 12 people in the last 18 months, and so we've doubled in size. Max Brantley. All right. So I met Max in 1971, and I was state chairman of Young Americans for Freedom, the largest conservative right-wing student organization in the state. And Max had just come out of Stanford University, I believe. I was a freshman, or sophomore at UALR, and Max was from, you know, a big college. And he was very much to the left. And we spent many nights, you know, around midnight arguing about politics. And I was a devotee of Ayn Rand. And it's been a long journey, folks. All right. We had all these arguments, sometimes pretty vicious. And so anyway, we're here today. And obviously, Max won that argument. And he's been one of the most influential people in my life. And I don't think I've ever flattered him like that, but it's true. And so he's been a real lodestar for me, and he's been a very influential person politically and journalistically in this state for 55 years, something like that. So I want to introduce you and welcome to Max Brantley, former editor-in-chief of the Arkansas Times.
Well, thanks, Alan, for the kind introduction. And I wanted to say also that I feel safe here today. I'm reminded of the 25 years I gave a speech every year at Boys State that generally ended with me being booed out of the room. The average Boys State delegate in Arkansas tends to reflect their parents' political views, which are generally to the right of me somewhat. So anyway, it's great to be here with some friendly faces, fellow travelers, as Alan called them. To get my title of this talk out of the way, The Lost Cause, it's, of course, I'm talking about politics and journalism, both in Arkansas and really the nation at large. I'm not ready to predict either one of those things will rise again. When I surrendered last year by retiring, I got the equivalent of a sidearm and a mule, my computer keyboard and a Twitter account. With them, I still fire occasional short bursts of invective into what I now like to call Darkansas. So anyway, this is how I wound up here. I was a senior in college in 1972, and my alma mater had a mock political convention to pick the presidential nominee for the party that was then out of power. The keynote speaker in my senior year in college was a Georgia peanut farmer. And I liked what he had to say about the New South and what he wanted to do for it. That appealed to me. After a semester in grad school at Stanford, I decided to head south toward home to valorize a Willie Morris title of a book I loved and see if I really wanted to work for newspapers, which had been my goal since about the fifth grade. I applied for a job at Hodding Carter's Greenville, Mississippi newspaper. They didn't have any openings. I also applied at the Arkansas Gazette, another newspaper famous for supporting the rule of law in the dark days of segregation. then managing editor Bob Douglas told me I needed some more experience before I could qualify for the Gazette, which I couldn't really disagree with that. My only experience at that point had been a sports editor for the weekly Buena Vista, Virginia News. Anyway, I went back to Palo Alto and packed up to come home to Lake Charles, Louisiana. I told of my experiences to Bill Rivers, who was my faculty advisor. He said he'd write a letter of recommendation to the Gazette's legendary city editor, Bill Shelton, who he'd met while researching a book on journalism. By the time I got home to Lake Charles, I had a copy of Bill Rivers' letter waiting for me. And the next day, when I was planning to go down to the Lake Charles American Press and throw myself on the mercy of Hugh Sherman to get a job, I got a call from Bill Shelton offering me a job at the Gazette, sight unseen. And so 50 years later, here I am. It began 50 years of news coverage in Little Rock in January 1973. I was a general assignment reporter. I never really looked back on my decision that news reporting should be my career, though much about the business has changed. I summarized that half century in a note on my retirement last year. Then, January 1973, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Arkansas Gazette was the dominant news medium in the state. The state was led by Governor Dale Bumpers. Virtually every office holder at every level of government was a Democrat. Today, the Arkansas Gazette is out of business. Republicans are dominant at virtually every level of government, save for the relatively free states of Pulaski County, Fayetteville, and some small parts of the Delta. As I wrote in my retirement note, and I was channeling George W. Bush's praise of the man overseeing Hurricane Katrina relief, heck of a job, Maxie. Now, I don't think I'm solely responsible for killing a newspaper and the demise of the Democratic Party in Arkansas, but it's hard to argue with the scoreboard. I'm going to talk today a little bit about how we came to this pass and what hopes lie ahead for change. My usual outlook applies. If you expect the worst, you won't be disappointed. First, politics. There's not a single explanation for Arkansas's political sea change. But the first is that we followed the trend of the South. We generally follow trends here in Arkansas, though we generally come in on the tail end. But we got there. Our Democratic Party was never monolithic. Many were Dixiecrats, as presidential election results showed. We were susceptible to the Republican Southern strategy of playing on racial divides. It was a winner for Orville Faubus for better than a decade, after all. The Republican Party eventually perfected the monolith that the Democrats never envisioned. It was built on racial resentment. It was built, as Angie Maxwell has written brilliantly from the University of Arkansas, on keeping women in their traditional places, barefoot and pregnant, as an Arkansas senator once put it. Democrats who continued to succeed, Mike Ross comes to mind as one, emulated the Republican strategy of promoting the three G's, God, guns, and gays. Simply put, it meant profess your Christianity, no other faith need apply, worship guns, and demonize sexual minorities. It helped, too, to beat up on labor unions and taxes. The Democratic Party held a majority for as long as it did, primarily, along with simple habit, because of the influence of some exceptionally gifted and generally progressive politicians, Dale Bumpers, David Pryor, Bill Clinton, Jim Guy Tucker. Two critical events hastened the Democrats' downfall. One was, ironically, Bill Clinton's election as President of the United States. Lieutenant Governor Jim Guy Tucker into the governor's chair. He would soon be targeted by the special persecutor, as I like to call him, Kenneth Starr, and driven from office on a charge that we now know was largely trumped up in Starr's long quest to nail Clinton. Mike Huckabee, who'd narrowly defeated Nate Coulter in a race to fill Tucker's lieutenant governor's seat, became governor. And the rest of that story now lives on today and in the reign of scowling Sarah Sanders. Another critical event was Barack Obama's election. The animosity among many Arkansans, white Arkansans, to a black man with a strange name was deep and real, and it lives on today. We see it every day. He was tarred, too, as Hillary Rodham Clinton was, as being seen as an elitist. Combine all these threads and a rigidity on messaging and party discipline with unlimited money, and you have today's Republican legislature. It's almost as obedient as the Faubus era segregationist legislature was to his leadership. There is a ray of hope here. The Republicans have begun to squabble a little bit among themselves. some are viewed as insufficiently Trumpist. This means that there are actually a few with a few shreds of principle left, not many, but a few. And while her admirers would disagree, I think most rational observers would think that Sarah Huckabee is off to a poor start as governor. She campaigned only in carefully controlled settings. She grants media access only to the safest reporters. She speaks in Republican message machine talking point terms unstintingly. For example, she constantly bemoans all the radical leftists roaming Arkansas. That would be me and about 15 others, as best I can tell. In her first year, the Arkansas poll gave her the lowest approval rating of any governor in 20 years. And a new poll this week also showed a decline in her favorability. Her attack on public schools, when fully developed, won't help those numbers. The scandal over the lectern purchase, corrupt from beginning to the end, even if not ultimately an indictable offense in my view, hasn't helped her. Nor has her penchant for high living, family vacation to Europe, and insider Super Bowl jaunts assisted by a $3 million a year team of chauffeurs and babysitters from the Arkansas State Police. But most of all, there's the thing that so many governors, including Orville Faubus, had, but she seems to lack, and that's a common touch, an ability to relate to all people. To make fun of herself, to smile and laugh at appropriate times, to avoid scowling. I know that my view of her is influenced by my own politics, but I can't think of a politician other than the man she once lied for, currently on trial in New York, who projects less personal likability. Even her father knew the value of humor, though his leaned heavily on sarcasm and potty jokes. What's more, she inherited, along with her mother's resentful personality, her dad's love for the grift and the trappings of royalty. I don't think this serves her well in Arkansas. So that's where we are politically in Arkansas, and I would add as a footnote that politicians at the local level, including in Little Rock, have adopted her strategy of resisting transparency and speaking in talking points. Government is not open at almost any level in Arkansas these days. The Democratic Party has recruited some strong legislative candidates this year, but gerrymandering and vote suppression laws, and the latest, a crackdown on online electronic voter registration, contribute to the difficulty of unseating Republicans. I'm hoping the school voucher giveaway and Arkansas's worst-in-the-nation abortion ban will prove useful to a few of the Democratic candidates if they can get their message out. And that brings us to the news business. If anything, I'm more pessimistic about the future of my chosen life work than I am about politics. In two decades, the U.S. has lost 3,000 newspapers and 43,000 newspaper jobs. In two decades, paid circulation of the 500 U.S. daily newspapers has dropped from 50 million to 10 million. 80% drop in circulation of daily newspapers in the United States. The story is the same in Arkansas. You may not be aware of it. Our state has essentially only one newspaper that publishes 7 days a week. That's the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. In the heyday after publisher Walter Hussman put the Arkansas Gazette out of business, it counted circulation of more than 250,000. You could buy a paper at just about any crossroads in Arkansas. Today, though, it isn't totally open about circulation, I'd put a generous estimate on their circulation of 50,000 to 60,000. Again, that's another 75% drop in circulation. It appears in print essentially only on Sundays so that it can hang on to lucrative government public notice advertising. Without those public notice ads, by the way, and paid obituaries, their current staffing would be in grave peril. The Democrat Gazette, I should give them credit, has a bigger staff and publishes more so-called pages in digital fashion than most other newspapers its size and even some in many larger cities. But I'd put its news staff nonetheless at about half it was during its heyday, a little bit over 100 staffers, I think, in the newsroom. Whatever else you might think of this or any other newspapers, these facts seem immutable to me. Newspapers are not attracting younger readers. As old heads like me die, subscription numbers will continue to dwindle. Ironic footnote, the Democrat Gazette readership, heavily dependent on urban readers in Pulaski County, is likely more liberal than the state electorate as a whole. You can judge that from the content of letters to the editor and the lack of interest in its arch-conservative editorial page. Also immutable, I think, is the declining importance of newspapers. Advertisers don't need it. They go to the web. Readers have found other sources of news, if or none at all. The result is the influence of newspapers has waned dramatically. The legislature doesn't really care what's in the newspaper anymore. And the newspaper, with its timid approach to news coverage, both sidesing, I call it, that is, an absence of a search for truth beyond stenographic regurgitation of politicians' prepared statements, is rarely like to make anybody uncomfortable or make any waves. I think a good example was the far less detailed coverage of what I thought was an incredibly damaging audit of Sarah Sanders' purchase of a lectern, as compared with the number of column inches they gave to a Baptist preacher who'd failed to tell his congregation about a sexual allegation against a staff member. That was a good story, don't get me wrong, but it was less important to me than the conduct of the chief officer of the state of Arkansas. TV stations' free websites, I suspect, are a far greater source of news for the public than newspapers in Arkansas. And local government is particularly shortchanged. It wasn't many years ago that North Little Rock, Maumelle, and Sherwood had robust, prize-winning weekly newspapers. And they covered local government like they do. Today, there are only limited online sources covering those significant suburban communities, and coverage in the daily paper is sporadic at best, if non-existent in some cases. I remember back to my first year in Arkansas, I covered the Jacksonville City Council every time it met. When is the last time that the Gazette has covered the Jacksonville City Council? Not lately. The great journalistic hope these days, in addition to trying to sell digital subscriptions, is nonprofit support, such as this Arkansas Times speaker series. A relative handful of organizations have been successful as nonprofit journalism, generally thanks to extremely generous, very wealthy philanthropists. The state's newsroom, a nonprofit, now has state capitol bureaus in all 50 states, and I'd like to give a plug here for one of their operations, the excellent Arkansas Advocate, which is staffed up with, I think, four reporters and doing a great job covering state government here. Again, this was built by an extremely large contribution from a very wealthy philanthropist. But like the tree falling in the forest, do these efforts matter if nobody reads them? As I read recently in a journalism publication, it said, quote, "Nonprofits offer hope in a dire media world, but at too many startups, disappointingly few readers actually see the work." And that's something to worry about. We've done pretty well. We have something like 4,000 subscribers now, and our web traffic is very large for our size, but against what the reach used to be for an Arkansas Gazette, it's relatively small. And if the legislators think they're have... Well, that's pretty good. It's the legislature still thinks that they are unreachable. But sometimes we break through, and that's why we keep trying. I do have questions about sustainability of nonprofit journalism. Tech Fortune started a number of digital news operations, but the backers' interest waned in many cases, and the startups were reduced or died. The goal of attaining sustainability through ongoing revenue has been very difficult. NPR has undergone layoffs. So has a major Chicago news operation, nonprofit news operation, one of the best of the bunch. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the Texas Tribune, but it's a fabulous source of Texas news run by Evan Smith. And it's had to have some of its first layoffs in a long time. They're still big and still doing very well. But Texas has a lot of big corporations and philanthropists that are still willing to endorse something that's not from a right-wing point of view. The Tribune tries to play it down the middle, but I think there's inevitably a hint of progressivism and tough coverage of a right-wing reactionary government, which they have in Texas. And the courts, don't get me started. The Waltons, if you think about fortunes in Arkansas, by the way, long ago decided the Arkansas Times was media non grata for our opposition to their charter school voucher campaign. I should also mention that in part thanks to Republican strategy, trust in news organizations has diminished. We tend to trust only those that we agree with. Call it the Fox News syndrome, but I should also admit that this tendency affects people on the progressive side as well. You watch Rachel Maddow, don't you, to this crowd, I'm sure, I would think. One proposed solution is government support for news organizations. I'm a longtime foe of government corporate welfare, so I come to that idea with some serious reservations. Do I really want a Trump or a Sarah Sanders in charge of the mechanics of passing out public dollars to news outlets? I know one that would be on the, not be on the short list if Sarah Sanders had anything to say about it. But there's no doubt that the loss of public watchdog, even though there were some pretty mangy watchdogs in the larger press we once enjoyed in the U.S., is dangerous for democracy, presuming we'll still have a democracy after this year's presidential election. So what do? We vote. We encourage others to vote. We educate to the extent we can, and through websites like the Arkansas Times, we put out information that we hope will influence people's considered decisions when they do come to vote. Above all else, as I close my daily Facebook roundup for 4 years of the Trump era, resist. Be heard. Don't let a noisy minority oppress minorities, silence teachers, ruin libraries, and crater public schools. Democracy is still alive in Arkansas, barely. We still have avenues to the ballot with popular initiatives, although they've been greatly hampered by the corporate lobby and the legislature controls through restrictive legislation. If petitioners are successful this year, we might have a chance to vote on upending the unconstitutional school voucher legislation that will pour hundreds of millions of dollars into unaccountable, indoctrinating private schools. And I think I can say there's a coming lawsuit on this topic that also holds some hope for us. Restoring access to abortion in Arkansas. Guaranteeing public access to information, re-toughening the Freedom of Information Act that was weakened by Sarah Sanders, improving the medical marijuana law. I'm not wholly on board on medical marijuana, but this amendment has a real important element that was written in by David Couch, and it is that it will make it all voter-approved measures added to the Constitution can't be repealed by the legislature without a public vote. Incredibly valuable provision in that amendment. We sorely need an improvement of the ballot initiative law, but it won't be before voters this year. I'll remind you that ballot initiatives brought us a substantial increase in the minimum wage. I think it's more than $11 an hour now. It would, otherwise, would be $7.25. It brought us medical marijuana and a significant amount of tax revenue with that, by the way, and it also brought us casino gambling, for better or worse, but again, it was a revenue producer. A citizen initiative also gave us a strong ethics law some years ago, but the Republicans have rendered it useless by court challenges to limits on campaign spending. I still believe that the First Amendment is mightier than the Second Amendment, if not as deadly. Use it is the only thing I suggest. But I'd also suggest try to smile a little while you're at it. I'm reminded of one of the late David Pryor's favorite stories about visiting a nursing home. He asked a resident who wasn't being particularly helpful, "Do you know who I am?" And the resident said, "Well, if you just ask at the front desk, they'll be able to tell you." I'll close by saying that my wife Ellen in the back of the room is with me today. This is her 48th anniversary present. She She's heard all this before. She will be happy to tell you. Anyway, but she reminds me often of who I am and fills countless other memory gaps as well. So happy 48th anniversary to the person I call my hard drive. And with that, I'll call a halt to it and take questions for anybody. And by the way, I want to thank, we have some 20 people around the state watching this on Zoom today. We're thoroughly up to date at the Arkansas Times.
And that's the show for this week. Thanks for listening. We welcome your feedback. You can write us at podcast@arctimes.com. That's podcasts@arctimes.com. If you like the show, tell your friends and leave a review wherever you get your podcast. I'm Amaya Jones, and we'll see you next week.